My name is Syed Hassan, and I'm with South Asia Democracy Watch. We are here with Professor Amartya Sen, a Nobel laureate, a humanist, a scholar, and an activist. We have heard from Amartya Sen in several interviews through YouTube or some other medium, but today we are talking to him live in the studio.
So that's another point. I mean, it seems at one point it seems you basically glorify Adam Smith also on one side, and then you are more Keynesian in your suggestions or treatment to the remedies of the current economics. It appears that you are more for government intervention, but then you.
I'm for government intervention where the government can do some good.
Yes.
And
yes.
That includes elementary education, elementary health care, which in India and Pakistan, you have very little going on.
So you don't think the market can do it by itself?
There's no country in the world which has become universally educated, universally health care, without the government. Mm-hmm. Even the government's role in universal education in the United States, just in quantitative terms, have been at least 6-7 times more than what India is trying to do today.
But how you...
Today, that there are state schools and the buses come and pick you up and take you there, and no one, not even any of the, extreme conservatives trying to get a presidential nomination had suggested that state schools be abolished, which is exactly what's going on in India. And similarly, the basic health care, the idea that you have nowhere to go to. I mean, here at least you have emergency, you have somewhere where people will not turn you down.
Yes.
Whole lot of people who absolutely nowhere to go to.
Mm-hmm.
If you have no education, no opportunity of public health care there, which is true of most of the country. And then you go to the quacks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Monique Wedderburn, by the way, director of the Asia Center here at University of Texas at Dallas, and you did bring up the importance of education, and I understand that you've invested and built two schools, both in India and Bangladesh. Can you share a little bit about that?
That's very kind. Yeah. When I got the Nobel,
yes,
I used that to start two trusts.
Okay.
One in India and one in Bangladesh.
Mm-hmm.
And they are concerned with elementary education, elementary health care, and gender equity. Little girls as opposed to
mm-hmm.
boys. Yeah. I mean, boys were concerned too, but mostly girls. We happen to have two schools, but that's not our main thing. Our main efforts have been to study the delivery of education and health care. So we work, I would say only a very fraction of our resources and effort have gone into those two schools. I'm pleased that they're working well. There's a Potichi school and so on in Orissa. Mm-hmm. But I think mostly that the terrible way the delivery of education was one, and this required a kind of political change. And for example, we found in West Bengal where we're doing an extensive study of that. That on an average day, not only was about half the children missing from the schools in which they were registered, that about 30% of the teachers were missing, 30 to 40% of the teachers were missing. So we wrote on that, and initially, the Union of Bengal Primary Teachers, ABPTA, was very upset. It's a left-wing union, it's a communist union. And they were very upset, though I had been a student activist when I was young, so my evil reputation from my college days helped me a bit. On the other hand, they were hopping mad about that, and I said the unions ought to do something about it. And I argued with them in their vocabulary. I was completely shameless. I even quoted Lenin to indicate what you think about union, which tried to foster the interests of its members,
mm-hmm.
but not of the society.
Yeah.
I think the old term for it is economism,
mm-hmm.
which is not a term of praise.
Yeah.
So we discussed that, and eventually the AVPTA decided to become a partner. So we hold joint meetings. They send around admonitions to school teachers about coming to classes in time, etc., and becoming wholly an ally. Then the other unit, the Communist Union, had about 80% of the students.
Mm-hmm.
But then there were other Congress Union and so on.
Mm-hmm.
There's no BJP Union yet. But then on the other, but then eventually they decided to join too. So we do it on a general basis. And I generally believe that you won't be. I mean, if you want to change the basic education and healthcare delivery, you of course need much more money. India spends very little on education and healthcare. It's only in comparison with Pakistan that India shines,
mm-hmm.
but no other country. China,
yeah.
India spends 1.2% of GDP on governmental health care. China spends about 3%.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that you have to spend on one side more money, but you have to look up the organization, and you have to get the workers' organization
mm-hmm.
on your side. You see, the trouble really is that there are two kinds of attitudes in India. One is an attitude of the right, mm-hmm. the union are evil, the less the better.
Yes.
Try to bust them.
Yes.
And the other is that the unions can do no wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are going to stand up for the workers, even if the workers are just neglecting students,
yes.
that's fine. I mean, in quite a lot of the villages, because of the success in agitation about salaries, primary teachers
mm-hmm.
get a salary which make them among the richest in the village.
Yes.
And the distance between the teachers and the poorest landless peasant family
mm-hmm.
student is big.
Yes.
And the union defend without we're defending the teacher. Now that it's changed,
mm-hmm.
I mean we have to see how far we can go. Certainly the attendance of teachers have gone up quite a bit
yes.
Since then. It's not 100% yet. So there is a battle on.
Yeah.
And the same thing can be done. We haven't tried it. Healthcare, that's our next project.
Perfect.
To do that. And
yeah.
Bangladesh, the focus has been, I've been chair in the Indian one. The Bangladeshi chair is my classmate, Rehman Sawan, and whose wife was a major thinker about gender equity and started the gender equity institution. And also legal aid for the poor in Bangladesh.
Yeah.
She is actually from a Pakistani, West Pakistani family.
So
Selma Ikramullah, as she was called,
yeah.
originally, Ikramullah family, the very powerful family.
Mm-hmm.
But they transformed, and what they did, they have concentrated almost entirely on the gender.
Okay.
And if you get the time, Bangladesh is a much greater success. It's like the only case of some success on gender equity in the subcontinent, on which I will say something tomorrow.
Okay. You're leading me into my question. I'm Beverly Hill, president of the Gendercide Awareness Project. I wanted to ask you, do you think that health and education for women are enough? Economic participation and education for women are sufficient to put them at the table when big decisions are made in society, to get them into politics, to get them into corporate offices?
Well, it's the biggest change you can make.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are three issues there. One is that the difference it makes is dramatic, and it's not just government and so on. And one of the things that Selma Kamala was very involved in Bangladesh is that most of the poor women in villages could not access the law, even though the Bangladeshi law of the 71 gave them a lot of rights, because they couldn't read and write.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't know what their rights were. So as the schooling expanded, it became possible to give them pamphlets and leaflets and so on.
Mm.
Just as okay. I saw a little leaflet as I was coming here, connected with your movement of the Gendercide Awareness Project, about what can be done, what's happening,
mm-hmm.
similarly thing. So I think it makes a very big difference. That's number one. Secondly, I think the sense of, I mean, what the education and healthcare does, and education, healthcare, and earning independent income does, is not just making you more able, but you get more listening within the family. It increases women's voice. And it's not just a question of women versus men. It's sometimes even young women against mother-in-laws who may sit down on you very heavily.
Yeah.
It gives them a power, it gives them confidence, and people get attention. The third issue to recognize is that education, I think there's no question that formal education is the most important thing that one should do, reading, writing, arithmetic. And I totally disagree with some of the big Indian thinkers, including, alas, Mahatma Gandhi, who thought formal education was no use.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very much of a vocational education. And I don't think that makes absolutely any sense whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, we have to go beyond that, there's no question.
Mm-hmm.
And one other thing I'm going to discuss, that even though the neglect of already born girls compared with boys dramatically goes down with mother's education, the search for a boy in the pre-birth stage does not.
Right. I was going to, you're bringing up my next question, and okay, then I'm going to let you answer ask some, Monique. I think it's a sad irony that in India, the people at the top of the socioeconomic ladder are the ones who kill off most aggressively using sex-selective abortion. But you've pointed out in your articles that the sex ratio among children in the elite is more skewed than among the lower classes. So if given that, how can we reform education so that women are valued and esteemed?
Well, I think that several things there. I think the contrast is not so much between the classes, but about regions.
Mm-hmm.
India is divided into two halves. Every state in north and west has a considerably significantly lower birth ratio of girls than in Europe. Every state in south and east has birth ratio of girls which is in the European range. So while the Indian average looks better than the Chinese,
mm-hmm.
But if you looked at north and west, it's worse than the Chinese. And if you looked at south and east, it's like in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So that you have to recognize also.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what the reason for that is. These are areas of ignorance, which I'm trying to understand. There are linguistic issues. We have to look at culture. If you look at the eastern states like Assam, Bengal, they lost gender distinction in language in the 11th century.
Mm.
Is that phenomenon connected at all?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
There are things going on that we don't fully understand.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing we know, and there the experience of South Korea is important, that South Korea, like China, had, you see, everywhere about 95 girls are born compared with 100 boys.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, 109 female fetuses are conceived than compared with male. 109 male fetuses are conceived. Let me put it differently. 100 male fetuses are conceived compared with 91
mm-hmm.
female fetuses. But since females do better than male everywhere throughout their life, even in the uterus,
mm-hmm.
by the time it's born, it's 105.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time there's no gender discrimination, you live long life, is offered at 105 women to 100 men.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was a lot of debate when I first started work on it, whether there is a biological difference. I don't have any doubt now that that is indeed the case. There is a biological difference. But you see, the sex selective abortion, when it came in, and that came in only towards the end of the 80s, and then it became big in the 90s, somehow did not take root in parts of the country, and it did in others. In Dhaka, I recently asked whether somebody wanted to know gender of your child, whether there are institute, whether there is a hospital which would supply with that. And apparently there are one or two. You have to be extremely rich to be able to do that. And of course, Bengalis being prejudiced, they said these are foreigners who come here who want to find out other than the local. So I think that is a big difference. Now, the upper class, lower class distinction fits into other things. Among the relatively poorer people, women work more. That gives them also a bigger voice compared with upper classes, where quite often women don't do anything, and so on. And then there's a conservative scriptural religious tradition also, which is often in a kind of a theoretical form stronger among the upper classes than the religiosity in the lower classes. Often take the form of various rituals, but not an enormous theory about women being inferior to men and so on. So there are quite a lot of complications in that story. We don't fully understand it, what goes on, but we do understand many things. The South Korea example is important because, like in China and South Korea, they also had, they had actually, instead of 100 to 95 in Europe, 100 to 93 in India, at the time of birth, there were 100 to 85 in China. And for a while, Korea, very much like that. At the time when women were otherwise quite liberated in China, they were winning Olympic, they were doing gymnastics, you see them everywhere, and somehow it didn't happen. The Koreans took that issue extremely seriously, and they had a kind of educational propaganda about the value of women. And you can see the impact of that, because the Korean ratio has now come back quite close to the European one, where the Chinese has not. So its education is not just formal education, which, again, I emphasize, in case I'm misunderstood, is really, really important. But going beyond that, there's a need for what I think Enlightenment theorists call enlightenment, namely an understanding of what's going on, which is more than just education.
Does that harken back to your call for more teaching of humanities?
No, that is, I'm commenting on humanities because, you see, there was at a time when people neglected science. Rabindranath Tagore and others went on saying that people don't take science seriously. Now everyone takes science, engineering seriously. But, you know, literature, poetry, and philosophy, it's a problem. All Indian philosophers are dead philosophers, really, if you think about that. I mean, there have been hardly any really original philosophical work in recent centuries, I'd say. So I think there is a need to change that. That I don't think is really gender issue related. I think that is required to get there. I mean, it may have some connection.
We will continue this interview in the next podcast.